to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, boy, oh boy, guys. Where do we go from there? Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. It is Saturday, August 8th, 2009. We just concluded a live interview with a member of European Parliament and chairman of the BNP, British National Party, Nick Griffin, on with us live, burning the midnight oil literally over there in the UK to be our guest this evening. And Bill Rowland, my friend, where do we go from Nick Griffin as we head into the second and third hour of tonight's live broadcast?
Well, I first should think, we should mention that our guest at the top of the hour, 1 hour from now, will be David Yeagley, the Bad Eagle, who is a conservative American Indian, and he wrote a very hard-hitting article on hatred of the white race, which defends us. It's not attacking us. So he's going to be on with us in 1 hour, and I'm really looking forward to that interview because he's got a lot to say. He sent me a list of topics, and we're really going to have a great hour with him.
So, David Yeagley is truly a very well-known and renowned conservative commentator.
It's so, very much so. So
you know, it would take a guy like
Nick
Griffin.
Two tonight.
Yeah, you got two of them tonight. It would take a guy like Nick Griffin. I don't want to say overshadows Yeagley, but it would take a guy like Nick Griffin to take the spotlight off of a man like that, even for a few moments. But you just really and truly, Bill, can't say enough about Nick Griffin, what they've accomplished. Hopefully we shed some light on the magnitude of what the BNP is doing over there. But even that is the tip of the iceberg, what we were able to cover in an hour of commercial radio. But I'll say this, you know, a lot of people applaud the work of this radio program and the accomplishments that we've been able to garner over the course of the last 5 years. But truly, that which we've done holds no candle to what the BNP is doing. They are the ones who really deserves the support and praise of our people. And, well, we could go on all night about it. But I do want to thank Andy McBride. Andy McBride was very instrumental in helping us secure Nick Griffin this evening, Andy McBride, the Southeast Regional Organizer of the British National Party. You know, and the BNP is very high on us. I have spoken with Nick a few times over the course of the last 5 years. I know that they're fans of the show. They support the show, but not half as much as we support them. Right, Bill?
That's true. And, of course, excessive modesty has never been one of our problems. But anyway, let me talk for a minute. I wanted to mention this real quick. The Political Cesspool Facebook page. Now, when we discussed this, I think it was last week.
I think it just came online last week, about maybe a day or two before last week's show.
That's correct. And it came on, and we mentioned it on the air. I think there were just a handful of fans who had joined the Political Cesspool fan base on the Facebook page. We now have 350 fans. And if you don't mind, James, I'd like to just go through and look over some of the fans, and we're not going to mention any names on air, of course, but just you talk about multiculturalism and diversity. Why, I think we've got one of the most diverse fan bases of any show in the world, because we do have fans from not only all points in the United States from coast to coast, but also fans from, I can see Spain here, I see Russia, I see Great Britain, of course, several from Great Britain, different towns and cities in Great Britain. And we actually have two fans who signed up from Malta. Malta, the trophy of Western Christianity, actually. So we're very proud to have our two fans from Malta, a great history there. So Switzerland, I see Switzerland here, and just one country after the other pops up. So we're very diverse, and we're truly a global show.
There you go. How about that? You know, Bill, I am the oldest 29-year-old in the world. I still don't have a handle on Facebook. I am able to link over to the page and take a look, but without logging in, I haven't created my own name or account or however that works yet. I've got to get on top of that. I've got to join our Facebook page. As you know, we have 350 fans, and the hosting staff of this show aren't among them. So we've got to get on there and get to supporting it. But what a rapid increase in the number of people who have joined up to that page and showing their support, letting us know that they are listening to us and they are fans of this program. 350 in the last week alone, with really not a lot of promotion.
That's true. And if our audience will recall, I mentioned one of the anti-racist sites that is listed when you do a search for for the political cesspool. And whereas we've got people from all over the world joining our fan base, this anti-racist site, which I think is called 5 Million Against Racism, they don't have nearly that many members, but virtually all of their members or people signed up to that page were from either Minnesota or Wisconsin, and they were all white. So they're really, they may embrace multiculturalism, but multiculturalism is not embracing them.
Very interesting statistics. See, now, if I knew how to use Facebook, I'd be able to understand all that. It would have known that. I hate getting scooped by Bill Rowland. But, no, Bill, actually, you scoop me all the time, and I'm always happy to learn from you, especially when you're talking about stuff that like this, which is just so exciting in a not even a trivial way. I mean, this isn't trivial at all when you're talking about people coming together and networking and communicating with one another. And thanks obviously goes out to the people who set that page up for us, our supporters and volunteers who created that page before we ever even knew it was existing. They had created it, and we're obviously making some strides on Facebook as well as other parts of the world, and even in real life, the cesspool is everywhere. You just can't deny an idea or a radio show whose time has come. Right, Bill?
Correct, and God bless Malta. That's all I can say. if it hadn't been for Malta, a little piece of history, if it had not been for Malta, there is a great likelihood that Western civilization would have been conquered by the Ottoman Empire.
But you must tell us why.
One of the great stands against the Muslim incursion into Europe was made on Malta, and it's a great history, and that's something we need to know more about. So we're delighted to have the Maltese on board with us.
Well, there you have it. You learn history. I mean, there's nothing that this show doesn't cover. But I do want to remind you of one important fact, getting back quickly to the Nick Griffin interview before we move on this evening. If you tuned in late, obviously there's a six-hour differential between Memphis time and London time. And if you got kind of lost in translation there trying to do the math on the time zones, don't worry. The Nick Griffin interview, like every show we do, will be available on demand in the broadcast archives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, free of charge, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network. So all you got to do to catch the Nick Griffin interview, and I'm going to listen to it as soon as this show's over, Bill, I promise you, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org after the show. Click on the archives, and there you'll have it. And not only it, but all of our shows dating back to 2005. Bill, a final word from you on the Nick Griffin interview. I know this was something you and I were talking about today, and then we've got to move on to some... God, I hate doing it, too. Man, you really don't want to go from Nick Griffin to the contemporary headlines we pluck out of the newspapers each week. But talk about the significance of the Nick Griffin interview as it relates to, really, the political cesspool trumping the American media.
Well, of course, we spent a good time, a good part of our evening last night sending out emails back and forth, particularly press releases to the different major networks and the different news outlets. Now, what response the show will get from that labor of love last night, we don't know. But certainly the media was made aware that Nick Griffin would be appearing on this show, and that this is the first American broadcast that Nick Griffin has made since his election to the European Parliament. Now, of course, anytime some third world potentate shows up on a radio show or comes to the United States, the media falls over themselves to get an interview or to get some grain of wisdom or goodwill from somebody from, some mud hut country. But Nick Griffin, whose party is clearly on the rise in Great Britain, and all of the right-wing parties in Europe are on the rise, because the natives of the continent of Europe are tired of watching immigrants tread over their countries and destroy their countries. It's no different in Europe than it is in the United States. The third world immigrants do not contribute. They absorb. They devour. They tear down. They ruin. Whatever part of Western, Caucasian, European civilization they can get their hands on or they can get their mouths over, they're going to devour it and destroy it. If that wasn't the case, then they would be living in countries which were turning away immigrants, but they don't. They live in countries where they're trying to escape from their own people. So if they don't want to live around their own people, why should we want to live around them? Why should we want people around us who essentially have wrecked their own countries or have not done anything to build their own countries? What do we hope to benefit from that? Cheap labor is not enough of a reason. And we've learned that over and over and over again, that cheap labor only leads to lower standard of living. And so, you know, Britain, France, Germany, all the countries where the doors have been kicked open and the immigrants have come in, the standard of living goes down wherever these immigrants live. And it's not going to get better, no matter how much money is put into social services, no matter how much money is put into education, no matter how much money is put into some sort of assimilation program or multicultural project. It's not going to work because it hasn't worked here. Now,
Bill, hang on. You're talking over Art, and you know how much he hates that. We got to go to a break. We don't want to, but we'll be back right after this. Sit tight, everybody.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, Frankie Valli and Art Frith, we're back. James Edwards and Bill Rowland, those tyrannical commercial breaks break for no one, not even us, if you can believe it. But Bill, I know you've been checking the email during the break there, and you got one from our good friend Tom Sunek. It's just a night full of celebrities this evening.
Yes, Tom Sunek sent me an email, and included in that email is his most recent article for the Occidental Observer, and it concerns Beauty and the Beast, Race and Racism in Europe, Part 1. So for those of you who are fans of our good friend Tom Sunek, you'll want to go to the Occidental Observer website, which is www.theoccidentalobserver.net, and look up Tom Sunek's article. It looks fascinating. I just started sort of probing it a little bit before we went to commercial break, or during the commercial break, rather, and it looks fascinating. So there's a more brilliant more brilliant scholarly work from our good friend Tom Sunek, who I hope we'll have back on the show soon, because he's really an excellent guest.
You can never have a guy like that enough. Surrounding ourselves with PhDs always makes us look a little bit smarter, Bill. And, no, Tom Sunek's great. I'm sure he'll be back. And the Occidental Observer, by the way, is, of course, the sister publication, the Internet publication of the Occidental Quarterly, which is, of course, one of our proud sponsors at our website and of this radio show. So check them out, and obviously always check out the work of Tom Sunek. Bill, some other stuff other than Nick Griffin is going on this week, and it's just, man, how disgusting, how filthy it is to transition from Nick Griffin to Sonia Sotomayor. We're going to get to her in a moment. She was obviously and quite unfortunately affirmed or confirmed as the first so-called Hispanic justices of the Supreme Court. We're going to get to that, but let's take a call or two before we do so. Give us a call if you want to be on the air. We are opening up the phone lines now. What do you think of the Nick Griffin interview? What do you want to talk about? 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-NEWS to be on the cesspool. And I believe we have Stan from Idaho on the line. Stan, are you there?
I'm here.
How's it going?
I'm doing good, James. And hi, Bill. How you doing?
Stan, how are you?
Good. I love the interview with Nick Griffin. I met him in 1999, and I thought then that this was a guy that was a common sense type of person that could be elected. What I called about is when you guys were asking, you know, what does it take before we can have a political party that's called the British National Party, basically what you were asking. Basically, things are much worse over there than it is here because of the fact that there's not as much room. You can't just take off and move to Wyoming or North Dakota. There's not much room for white flight. And so if you're going to leave the situation in Britain, unless you have a lot of money, you literally have to immigrate to the United States or Australia or New Zealand. But I've got a plan where people can actually do something right now, and it's actually mainstream. A lot of older white people now are raising hell at these town hall meetings. And it's all over the Internet. It's up on YouTube, and AARP got a dose of it the other day. And really what's happening is people are to these so-called politically correct spokespeople. And I think that it's time for people to share to your this health care bill, and what the people I see that are complaining about are saying is it's taking away our freedom, that basically you're just telling us that we're going to have to take this health care plan, and if we don't take it, it's going to cost us so much that, in effect, we have to opt out for the national health care plan. So anyway, that's just some comments, and I just think that it's in the air right now, and I think, Bill, you even told me this week that saying that you're hearing a different type of person now talking about politics.
That's true, Stan. That's true. And we have discussed this before, that finally when it comes to money and the cost of living, then white people get upset.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate fact, but at least they're getting upset.
Yeah, and as long as it's becoming more and more mainstream to talk about ethnicity, and the best thing that I've seen so far is a link to YouTube where Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are now posing the question, is Barack Obama a racist? Does he hate white people?
No.
Yeah.
Rhetorical question.
Yeah.
They asked the rhetorical question of the millennium.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I wonder why they would do that.
Well, it's because they're losing their share of the market.
It couldn't be because they truly want to stand on the right side of the fence. I mean, it has to be some monetary or self-absorbed reason why they would do that. But even so, I'm still surprised.
Well, that's good. And I think what the hope is that with this new law that's being proposed, this Fair Doctrine law, which I don't know if that was under Clinton's administration or whether they're trying to push it through, but the new head guy of the FCC wants to ram it through and tell stations that they have to have a balance of programming. So talk radio, which is predominantly, as we well know, neocon radio, if they were forced to say, well, you have to drop a few of your so-called conservative talk show people and put some liberals on, some of these internet radio networks might become very popular and may become a very profitable enterprise if some of these talk show hosts start jumping ship.
Well, I mean,
you
see, I think that there is obviously, no doubt about it, a vacuum or a great room for the growth, just as the BNP has grown, for right-of-center or nationalistic entities to grow here in America. I mean, you look at the success, the relative success of this show, and obviously there is a market for such a message, and you see Liberty News Radio and the growth that it's experiencing and some other alternative venues out there. I mean, there's no doubt about it, Stan, that I think fundamentally on a very basic and root level, now when you get into the more advanced stuff, you know, it takes people time to adjust and come around, but on a very basic and fundamental level, I still think we're delivering a message on this show that resonates with the vast majority of European Americans in this country.
Well,
I think it's really
what was a good question. I don't remember which one of you asked this question of Nick, but when you asked who is the type of person that supports
right.
the BNP, and what did he say? He said the small business person. Okay,
and real people.
You'll be surprised. But in the beginnings of the Bolshevik Revolution, I'm reading a story, a book now called Young Lenin, or Young Stalin. And some of the people that supported the Bolsheviks in the beginning were the business people who, because there was so much turmoil, the Cossacks at the time, of course this is a different enemy, but the Cossacks at the time were overreacting to the Bolsheviks and started hurting business and destroying property and killing the friends and family of well-to-do people. And so literally the Bolsheviks could come in and say, we will protect you from this violence, but in return you must give us protection money. So I think what's going to happen is you're going to see, like, the political cesspool eventually, because these small business people, small insurance people, small contractors or whatever, who are getting aced out by affirmative action and over government controls, they're going to say, I want to advertise and promote my products and services on the political cesspool.
Well, Stan, God knows if there are any companies like that out there, please let us know, because despite any growth we've we've seen. We're still not getting those business sponsors, and we rely almost 100% on our friends and listeners out there. But Stan, I mean this quite seriously. Get in touch with us. We got to book you as a guest, much less a caller. We got to book you for a guest segment. We're about to go to our next commercial break, so we're going to let you get back to your evening. But
I'll be glad to do it.
Send us an email. I'd love to talk with you more.
And just a parting shot as I go. Just remember what Sam Dixon says: let the bad times roll, baby.
Well, I don't think there's anything we're going to do to stop that. So, thankfully,
okay,
Sam's going to be he's going to be happy about the result there. Thank you for calling, Stan.
All right, James.
Idaho. And we've got to go to a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Sonia Sotomayor. Man, you know I hate to do it. I don't want to, but we got to. It's big news. We're back right after this.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, continuing on this evening, welcome back, everybody. What a celebratory and great night it is in the political cesspool tonight. James Edwards and Bill Rowland with you. Got to talk about Sotomayor for a moment, unfortunately. And I read directly from our blog here at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you support this program, please let us know. We are listener-supported. We need your help to solidify the strides that we've made and continue to gain ground. You can donate to this show at thepoliticalcesspool.org while you're reading the blog. But I asked the rhetorical question again, why should we vote Republican? I'm going to read to you, and then we're going to toss it over to Bill for some commentary, a series of quotes from Missouri Republican Senator Kit Bond on why he is voting or did vote to confirm Sotomayor. This is what Kit Bond said. I disagree that the civil rights of a firefighter mean so little that they do not deserve even a full opinion before an appeals court. That's something we could obviously agree with. He goes on to say more things that we can agree with, such as, I disagree that judges should ever consider foreign law when looking for a meaning in U.S. statutes or the U.S. Constitution. And he says these things, of course, because that's what Sotomayor did. Sotomayor did prove that she was a racist and prove that she was anti-white in her opinion against the white New Jersey firefighters. She did seek the meaning of U.S. statutes from outside legal opinions in other countries. Kit Bond goes on to mention that Sotomayor is obviously anti-Second Amendment by saying, I disagree that the Second Amendment protection of an individual's right to bear arms does not apply to the states. Sotomayor believes that the Second Amendment does not apply to the individual states. He says all that, quite rightly, and then says, but I do agree that Judge Sotomayor has proven herself a well-qualified jurist. So, Bill, he disagrees with everything she's ever said or done, but does agree that she is a perfect fit for the Supreme Court. Now, with Republicans like these, who needs the Democrats?
Well, obviously the Republicans are desperately fearful of losing even one Hispanic vote. And so...
Do they even have one Hispanic vote to lose?
Well, they should get Sotomayor's now. I mean, she should vote for Kit Bond if she's ever in Missouri. I'm sure she could get signed up on the voter rolls probably in 5 minutes. But in any event, this is all playing up to the phantom Hispanic vote out there that's going to suddenly awaken to the glory of the Republican Party. And of course, it's all, they're playing the race card by doing this. And of course, the worst offender of all is Lindsey Graham, who never met an illegal immigrant he didn't love, adore, and want to make into a Republican. So they're all in the same category of, you know, anti-white Republicans. And we should come up with a term, really, for these anti-white Republicans, because they care about everybody else except their own constituents.
Well, you see, I mean, obviously, Bill, they've never heard of Nick Griffin and the BNP. I mean, they don't know. I mean, this is a party that came from nowhere, complete obscurity, and is winning seats in the highest elective body. I mean, it seems as though that would be a playbook they would want to follow, not the failed attempt to outpander the Democrats, which will never and has never been successful.
True. But I think we have to keep in mind, we always got to remember history. And as a dog returns to its vomit, so the Republican Party returns to its origins as an anti-white party. The Republican Party was created, really, as an anti-white party. And in the South, until really very recently, Republicans were called the black Republicans because they pandered only for black votes. They didn't seek the white Southern vote. And only after years and years and years of neglect by the Democrats and corruption and game playing by the Democrats did the South begin to vote Republican. And, you know, some legitimate Republican candidates came up. But even then, the Republican Party fought against the Southern wing of their own party, of their own constituency. So they're simply returning to their own vile mess of dark pottage. There's nothing really we should be surprised about with what the Republicans are doing. The exception is this time nobody's listening to them. They're losing their constituency, and they're going after fool's gold. They're not going to win the black vote. They're not going to win the Hispanic vote. Instead, they're just going to make more enemies on the right.
Well, I don't know how many more they could have. I don't know really who takes them seriously. The only people who vote for them are the folks, the lemmings, who have their vote stuck on automatic. I don't think any Christian or paleoconservative in good conscience is voting Republican anymore. I mean, maybe a couple of them held their nose because Obama was just so bad. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, Bill, even though whites are the only people, conservative whites are the only people who vote Republican, they are, without a doubt, the only people that the Republican Party is not pandering to. And this Sotomayor, I mean, you know that this nitwit and this affirmative action appointee is going to legislate only her judicial opinions, I should say, will be guided only by her liberal philosophy and will have nothing to do with law. She will legislate from the bench based upon that liberal ideology because she's probably never even cracked a law book.
Sotomayor, in the long run, is going to be an irritant to everybody else on the Supreme Court bench. She is racially conscious. She's racially aware, which puts her at odds with virtually every other ethnic group on the Supreme Court. Even the other members whose names end in vowels, Alito and Anthony Scalia. So she is going to be a real irritant to everybody, and I think she's going to be a wild card in some cases, and I think she's going to simply render opinions and leave commentaries that are designed to rankle everyone else. She may vote on a Supreme Court issue and simply make a commentary on it that's going to appear to be divisive, or it will be divisive. So I think she's going to prove to be one person that everyone regrets has put on the Supreme Court because she is so militant in her views.
I just can't understand still, though. I guess I understand it, but it just, as a guy who actually has convictions and a soul, loyalty to his family above other people, the Republican Party and this pathetic, they are so pathetic. They are god-awful pathetic. And it's everywhere. I mean, it's in the local parties like the Shelby County Republican Party here in Memphis where they say, you know, it's going to take them 15 years, but, you know, all they want is to capture a respectable percentage of the black vote. I mean, blacks are 12% of the population. All right. You know, when Pat Buchanan was on this show, he said, you want to win elections, you go hunting where the ducks are, so to speak. You know, why aren't the Republican Party, the Republicans in Shelby County and across the country reaching out to the only people who are likely to vote for them? They will never get these votes. And it just, wow. I mean, you know, to pander to a person like Sotomayor, who hates them to begin with, has proven over her career that she hates them, hates the principles that the Republicans are supposed to stand for, and certainly hates the kind of people who typically vote Republican. The fact that they would pander for a Hispanic vote that they'll never get and willingly confirm her, I don't know, Bill. I don't know if that just speaks to the utter fact that they will have no redeemable qualities, or it speaks to the magnitude of the effect that political correctness and the desire to be politically correct has in our country. Either way, this party needs to go. I mean, we need our own BNP, but I don't know if that's possible here because we have a two-party winner-take-all system where they have a parliamentary system where you get elected based upon a percentage of the vote, not if you carry the plurality or the majority. I don't know.
The Republican Party is run by elitists. They represent the upper levels of the upper echelons of corporate America, and these people have a perverse enough sense of what America is about without controlling a party to have their agenda pushed through. Remember that it was Dwight D. Eisenhower who warned us at the end of his term, many years ago, that the real threat to this country was the military-industrial complex. And what he meant by that was big business, people with lots of money, simply using American citizens as pawns in wars, in foreign entanglements, and for social experiments.
You know, wasn't it interesting? You're talking about Eisenhower. He left a whole lot to be desired, I mean, to say the least. And he looks like a damn, I mean, he looks like Christ compared to what we're left with now. And that's how far America has fallen in 50 years. I mean, that's a real good way to look at it. I mean, 50, 60 years, wow. What happened to America? Well, we talk about it every day here on the Cesspool, and we're going to talk more about it. I'm going to give you an example, Bill. I'm going to give everyone an example. We only have a couple of seconds to break, but when we come back, I got a segment to look forward to. The mainstream media this week alone has given us a prime example of what is racism and what is not racism. So when we come back, we're going to give you two examples, one from Pennsylvania and one, I guess, is nationwide news. But anyway, what is racism? What is not racism? According to the mainstream media, you'll be surprised and you'll find out when the Cesspool returns on the Liberty News Radio Network right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Okay. What is racism? What is not racism? Well, here in the political cesspool, we think that affirmative action, for example, would be a perfect example of racism, but the mainstream media thinks that, well, for example, the Obama Joker poster is racist. Now, everyone's seen it by now. It's kind of gone viral over the internet, as they say, over the course of the last week, 10 days. And we all saw it coming. No white person is ever allowed, as I write on our blog, to express any feelings about any black person whatsoever, except for the utmost respect and deep admiration. Anything less, in their opinion, is racism. And never mind the poster is an obvious takeoff of the Heath Ledger Joker character in the most recent Batman movie. The anti-racists know better, and the Joker thing was just a ruse, and the real motivation was to show a black man in grease paint. Now, Bill, prime example of racism, if you ask the American media. And if you ask Earl Hutchinson, who is the president of some organization called the Los Angeles Urban Policy Roundtable, he denounced the image and called on those behind it to reveal themselves. He went on to say, quote, depicting the president as demonic and socialist goes beyond political spoofery. It's mean-spirited and dangerous. Coincidentally enough, the liberal tabloid LA Weekly, which depicted George W. Bush as Dracula on its cover, denounced the Obama Joker poster as extremely racist. Now, that's not hypocritical at all, of course. But the LA Weekly tabloid went on to say that the only thing missing from the Obama Joker poster was the noose. The noose, Bill, was the only thing that was missing. So it goes without saying that that poster was extremely racist. But let me tell you what is not racist. The University of Pennsylvania has a scholarship program. Well, let me just be frank with you. The University of Pennsylvania thinks that European Americans can go to hell. That's what they think. They have a full scholarship program for black males only. And here's what they have to say. But this isn't racism. Keep in mind, this is not an example of racism. The University of Pennsylvania says that black men earned only 2.1% of doctoral degrees awarded at American universities in 2008. In response, the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education has made a serious commitment to preparing promising black men for admission and success in PhD programs and education. You can read more about this at our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, ladies and gentlemen, but it goes on to elaborate on how the University of Pennsylvania will fund tuition, travel expenses, the whole nine yards for promising black candidates to come and secure their PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. At the bottom of their ad, at the bottom of this advertisement from the University of Pennsylvania, in all capital letters, it says, "This program is for black males only." The Heath Ledger Obama Joker poster is racist. A program from an American university that gives all of these, you know, how many promising and qualified white students wouldn't love to have a free ride like this? The what the University of Pennsylvania is offering, the scholarship for black males only, not racist. Bill, is it kind of backwards there to you? I mean, is what's racist and not racist kind of backwards in terms of the way the media is portraying it?
Let's talk about this situation in general. People like Gates, Henry Louis Gates, and the people who set up these affirmative action programs at colleges, and the people who scream racism, which traps white people. Really, racism is a you know, it's a snare for white people is all it is. It's the, you know, one of those snares like the Vietnamese used to build. You know, they you put a thin covering over a big hole filled with broken glass and bamboo spears, and the your victim falls into it, a tiger trap type thing. All of these people have one thing in common, and they suffer a racial form of agoraphobia. And for those of you out there who don't know about agoraphobia, it's the fear of going outside of your house or outside of your apartment or away from where you live. And the agoraphobic lives in this little sheltered world surrounded by junk and trash and all the things and that they can collect into one or two rooms. This is what an agoraphobic is. And essentially, the people who play this race game or always throwing the race card up or who try to scream about victimhood are living in this little sheltered world where they can do nothing else but talk about how everybody else is racist and anything that you do is part of their little world and not the bigger world around them. And it just simply is a symptomatic of a very small mind in a very small place. And so, you know, I think we get a little too concerned about what these people say. If we ignored them, they'd go away because they couldn't drag us into this little tiny tight space where too many white people are willing to be dragged. But, you know, as far as the University of Pennsylvania, these affirmative action programs always backfire because it becomes an endless process. And it's a scholarship here, a scholarship there, and pretty soon the whole university is being held hostage as an affirmative action victim. And so that's what I hope happens to them. Go ahead and carry this as far as you think you can because you're going to end up giving more than you planned.
Well, Bill, naturally, you're exactly right. But this thing in Pennsylvania, I mean, not enough can be said about it. It is disgusting beyond – I have no words. I'm at a loss for words at how disgusting this is. Now, and I say that not as a hypocrite as they are. I think that what should be done – is that the most qualified students, whatever race they may be, should be allowed to enjoy the benefits of these type scholarships. I'm not going to be a hypocrite and say that they should be necessarily white only, although I like our chances in a level playing field when it comes to IQ and academics. But no, I'm not going to be a hypocrite there and say it should be white only. But yet they can say it's black only. That's not racist. Don't get me started. Anyway, we have a caller now, actually a caller who is another leader in this movement, and I'm very happy to know that he is called in tonight. Frank Roman from Chattanooga, Tennessee, of European Americans United, a very, very good organization, great website, Western Voices World News. Frank, how you doing?
Hello, James. How are you? I thoroughly enjoyed the interview with MP Griffin. That was really, really good.
Well, we're most thankful for your support and your promotion of that interview.
Oh, no problem. We were glad to do it.
Well, what can we do for you tonight, Frank? And again, what an honor it is to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to listen to you guys. I don't call in like I should, but I try to catch you as often as possible. You guys were talking about the Republicans and why we shouldn't support them. I want to point out to people that, and I mentioned this in one of my podcasts, we remember when Ron Paul was running for president. It was far and away from the left. It was the Limbaughs and the Hannitys, Mark Levin, Laura Ingraham, Bill O'Reilly, Neil Bortz. These were the people who regularly and without fail demonized and pilloried people like Dr. Ron Paul, not to mention Pat Buchanan and Pastor Chuck Baldwin. In my opinion, had the neocons exerted even a tenth of the energy they used on Dr. Paul to cast him as a fruit basket rather than an agent of real change, he most likely would be sitting in the White House. Would you agree?
I would like to have seen that. If my vote would have elected the president, it would be Chuck Baldwin in the White House today. But certainly, they did him much more harm than good, to say the least.
Well, the so-called right did more damage to Ron Paul than the left could have dreamed.
And absolutely. No, there's no question about that. Head. Absolutely.
This is what crawls under my skin. I do listen to some of these talk shows on a fairly regular basis, not so much to be informed, but just to simply monitor their hypocrisy.
Right.
Now, especially, in my opinion, Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, they lead the charge. They're always talking about going back to the original form of the Constitution. Closing the borders, giving people tax breaks, you know, reducing the size of government. Well, good God, they had the chance to support a man that stood for those platforms, and instead, they dismantled him and they made moot the wishes of a very, very large segment of the European American population, if
right.
I may be a bit biased.
Well, Frank, listen, you're right on target, as always. And I want to say this because we only have 30 seconds left till break. Folks, check out Western Voices World News, WVWnews.net. Read more about Frank Roman. Frank, you're right on target, 100%. Ron Paul probably could have been elected if the GOP would have gotten behind him. Certainly had more popular support. I want to continue this with you, Frank, but we got to go to break. We got to go to the national news burst. Sit tight, and we'll be back right after this.
Political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rising sun.
Frank, are you there?
Yes.
Hang on 1 second till the music stops. Are you still there, Frank?